This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Friday, 23rd of July, 2021. And yesterday, pretty mixed session, a bit sideways during the cash session, at least in the U.S., where we saw averages back and forth, sort of intraday dips, not really threatening much, not much upside impulse either. But then towards the end of trading and after the close, we got these very strong results from Twitter and Snap, which relieved a lot of anxiety around what the strength of the online advertising business is going to be as we're sort of trying to shift post-pandemic. Are certainly opening up our economies. And the answer seems to be at least quite good. And that's obviously very good for those mega caps, the $2 trillion and near $2 trillion companies like Facebook and Alphabet, which were up after hours as well. Nothing really major to pull out of this, our equity theme baskets in terms of relative performance. I'm a bit surprised to see the crypto and blockchain basket did not do better yesterday, given that we saw quite a decent surge in the crypto space, pulling further away from trouble, although we need a bit more to sort of break recent downtrends. Really happy to have you on the line, Stan Jakobsen, our chief investment officer. And you pulled out a couple of charts and sent my way, and I think it's a really interesting talking point, this next one here on slide three, which is one of these very old surveys. It's been around a long time, a weekly survey of sentiment in the U.S. I can't remember the AA, what it stands for, American something or other of investors. But here we are, we're pushing back towards all-time highs. Yes, we saw a brief little flurry of a dip, and we're at the lowest sentiment readings in terms of at least bullish that we have been since last October. So that was pre the announcement of the effectiveness of vaccines. I saw another reading from somewhere else. I can't remember. I don't know how they put it together, but showed that we were at extreme fear recently. What kind of pull away are you getting from this kind of a sentiment survey, given where we are in markets?
I think it's, again, a case of looking at how broad-based this rally in stock is. I think a lot of people have experienced that in particular July has been a very tough month. Looking at the basket themes that we run, I think there's only one or two of the baskets that months to date is up. So it's very, very clear that we have two equity markets right now. We have the top five stock names in the S&P 500 that keeps driving the market higher. And you have, you know, the fangs overall, but the rest of the market is sideways to lower. And in particular, I think what is noticeable is that industries and companies which should be in the sweet spot is actually doing extremely poorly. Of course, here I'm talking about green transformation, next generation med, 3D printing and the likes, and they're all doing extremely poorly. So I think if you took away those leadership stocks that we have, we actually have a market which has been sideways to lower longer. And I think that is what the AAI is reflecting.
I guess it's hard to, as a contrarian, to see a reading like that, and you still almost want to, the idea with these surveys is when things get too pessimistic, you want to do the opposite. And of course, we're not at an extreme by any means, but you can see some of those extremes that happened right in the midst of when we were about to just continue recovering very strongly back in 2020. So interesting to watch these survey readings. And of course, the market breadth, a theme we've played on quite a bit recently. And then yesterday we had an ECB meeting, which really didn't produce much in the way of a market reaction, pretty much a fizzle in the euro, the market taking this as quite dovish, as we're seeing Lagarde saying that of course, we have a new message on guidance on what their policy is on vis-a-vis inflation, this so-called symmetric CPI target of 2%, which means sort of spelled out in the statement that they will allow, apparently they're quite visionary on the future course of inflation, but they will allow so-called transitory period slightly above that. So less tolerant in the wording than this average inflation targeting regime from the Fed, where it's sort of clear they want to see a 2% average and they're willing to let it stray. And recent experience of 5% inflation points to this as well in the U.S., that they're willing to allow it to stray for significant periods above 2% to get the average. There were a couple of dissenting voices. No surprise that among those was Bundesbank's Weidmann and then the Belgian Governor Wunsch. President Lagarde saying that they, A, learned their lesson from previous cycles to not tighten too soon, and B, that there was overwhelming majority in support of this move. It's worth noting, of course, that German and EU yields settled lower. The five-year, if I'm not mistaken, posted a new low yesterday. I put up a chart on slide four showing the 10-year yield pushing back towards those lows. And really, it's, you can almost not speak of any rise in yields if we're working below that line of put on there, which was sort of the highs before we got the reaction in the rise in yields post vaccine success, hopes that the economy in Europe would emerge from the pandemic. Incredibly, we've settled back lower. And then I just put for perspective banks, European banks, so this Eurostoxx banking index and its sensitivity to the shape of the yield curve. Stane, another chart you brought in, and I don't know if you have any other takeaways from the ECB from what I just, the laundry list I just ran down there, Stane, but also great perspective and something I hadn't seen charted before. You pulled in this chart from Macro Markets Daily on slide five, showing that the ECB's balance sheet as a percentage of the general government debt, so not just a percentage of GDP, which is almost always universally what you're seeing out there circulated and how big bank balance sheets are, but as a percentage of outstanding debt. Interesting perspective there. And then I guess worth noting the acceleration since the pandemic. Your thoughts?
It just clearly shows that the ECB is the most obvious institution around. Excuse me. And that the since we got Lagarde as the president of the ECB, it's been accelerating in terms of its modus operandi in terms of the forward guidance as well. And I think yesterday's meeting was a clear indication that we're going to have negative interest rates for longer. So in other words, the ECB's leadership continues to think that the low interest rate has a positive bearing on the economy. I think a number of economists, including myself, would argue that it's actually the opposite. That there's a reason why we have negative real rates, and that is that we have no productivity. So instead of continuing to focus on this ramping up, as you see very clearly in this chart, the second part, of course, being that the ECB's balance sheet is a ever larger share of the overall market for debt. And that is a concern because basically we are on the way to end up in a Japanese situation where the Japanese debt is owned almost entirely by a counterpart in the public space, and this is of course is the ECB in the case of the Europe. So I think it very concerning and a huge misjudgment by the ECB in the narrative they're trying to create. They think that they are facilitating credit through the banking system. The case is that through this action they are making assets, housing prices, equity markets, anything that has nothing to do really with the day-to-day running of an economy that is going up in price, while the productivity, basic research, and investment into school system and the likes are being left behind. So I must say, John, that chart is very concerning. And I think, as you rightly point out, the acceleration over recent periods, of course, it has to do with the COVID-19, but just the concept that that something that doesn't work keeps being used as the way to throw for future problems is a risk for the market, because simply we will end up having no bond market, government bond market in Europe.
Yeah, to put it a different way, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So I guess that's what the setup is here. And then for the euro, we saw a very tepid sort of attempt at a rally yesterday. It was around the time as well that that the U.S. jobless claims spiked. I wouldn't take anything out of a single misprint or bad print in the U.S. claims, but that rally was quickly beaten back, sort of in line with the drop in EU yields. I think for solid reasons there. I was thinking maybe we'd have a chance to back up a bit further, but it looks to me like Eurodollar is heavy, and we've talked endlessly about that technical area. So it'd be interesting to see where we close the week. And then next week, FOMC week, and really staying to close out your thoughts here. This we've talked about it the last couple of times you've been on the podcast. this August timeframe swinging into view. We've got the FOMC next week. We've got the latest little print on the Treasury's general account rundown, still showing it did drop, I'm forgetting how much, 30 billion or so, but still more than 100 billion above the target, supposedly by August 1st, of 500 billion. With this sort of forward sense or this sense that and these low yields, markets sentiment dropping, is August going to be still a wait and see mode, or do you think we see some volatility picking up here around these factors that we've talked about?
I think August and of course potentially going into September is going to be a big inflection point. I mean, as we talk today, we have the highest energy prices we've seen in decades. Even coal prices has been one of the main headlines over the last few days, is hitting all-time high because electricity consumption is going off the charts. So, John, you know, we have a central bank environment, which is everything, nothing to see here, move on, while the supply chain continue to increase inflation. And to be honest, the only thing that can really stop the equity market and risk on and the housing market in its tracks is that we have some inflation coming through. And I think there is a catch-up effect, both in interest rates, but certainly in inflation coming through, because, you know, we are so late in the cycle now that companies have to adjust the prices upwards. And that happens while you have to talk tapering in the US, while you have to talk about this general account impact on the market. And don't forget, we have a reverse repo that sits in massive amounts. So the plumbing doesn't work, the forward guidance doesn't work, and everybody tends to ignore what is really going on, which is that the supply side of the economy continues to increase. I mean, yesterday we saw that the delivery for chips is increasing again. I think we're up to 23 weeks to get delivery of basic chips now. So, John, I'm absolutely certain that that's August, September. And to be honest, on sort of a more tactical approach, I'm certainly going to put out a note in the next 2 to 3 days to scale down risk relatively, even in the 100-year portfolio, because I think it's only a matter of time now, John.
All right. And one thing I would just add to that is the FX angle, and that is the dollar has just been persistently strong here. I would have expected the dollar to ease back some. So you see things like, of course, Eurodollar is still very heavy on that key support zone. Aussie dollar as well. It's sort of put together a little rally from the lows, but it hasn't broken any meaningful, even tactical resistance. I've got a chart on that on slide 6. And then underlining, I think, your points on the supply side risk and pricing risk is this underinvestment in things like the oil market. We've talked about this before, the ESG focus. It's still oil that makes the world go round. You see something like Schlumberger reporting, and I've got the last couple earnings reports scheduled for today on slide 7. And it managed to sort of rally Schlumberger to back towards sort of pre-pandemic levels when the crude oil price was closer to the $55 to $60 range. Versus hitting well above 70 recently. And despite that, that equity price has retreated almost 25% going into today's earnings. So it'll be interesting to see as oil demand comes back online, if the supply is able to meet it, when that balance becomes more of a stress on prices. I think our oil strategist, commodity strategist, Ola would say it's much more a 2022 question for the bigger impact there. Stain, one last thing, actually, and just as a reminder, you've talked a lot about inflation on your couple of appearances recently. We have a key week next week on that front as well. Two things. The Q2 GDP is out on Thursday, and there's a macro overview here on slide 9 with, I don't even have the GDP expected there, but I do have the GDP price index expected, and that's at 5.4%. That is the highest level since Q1 of 1982. By a significant margin. And then the PC inflation is up on Friday. What does it mean? What does it mean? Where do we start to get unsettled, Stain? Do we have to see several months, or is it just another print in August maybe? Or what do you think? What do you think the market's thinking here and continuing to bid up treasuries? We've talked about maybe a lack of price discovery there. Timing wise, I guess you are looking at September, but what's just any refresher on your thoughts here on these types of inflationary readings and how the market reacts to them?
So, in terms of the actual reading on the CPI, it is important to understand that we are now moving from what is actually transitory price impacts. The used car sales is one thing, but we are moving into, and this is classically what we see in inflation boost, and that is that we are moving into the rent equivalent, which is 25% of the CPI, will start to rise significantly because, of course, the fact that the real estate market has risen so fast and so high means that the rent equivalent will have to catch up. Of course, there can only be a maximum difference between the rental market and the owner's equivalent market. So this will really take the inflation to from the transitory to the more persistent inflation. And then there was a note out yesterday, I think, by Lindsay saying that, every time we've had inflation above 5%, in 10 incidents, in 8 of those, we've always ended significantly higher on inflation. And I think this is one of the 8 times where we go higher. So the first half has seen, as you say, over 5% inflation. We know mechanically that the rent equivalent go up, and we do know that the supply side of the equation, that being, the metallization of the economy, means that there's still pressure. I mean, as you just alluded to, in the oil market, you have the coal market, you have the emission prices, you have the LNG, you have the natural gas, all of them trading at very, very high prices relatively, and becoming a huge tax on the growth and on the inflation side. So you will both have a tax on inflation, which means on consumption, and then you have a tax on the actual output of the economy. So to me, again, John, it takes time for these things to go through the pipeline, but now companies are raising prices. Rent equivalent, 25% of the CPI will continue higher. That there is, in my opinion, very, very, very slim chance that we can avoid to see a continued level between 4 and 6% going into the second half.
Yeah, and even adding to that point is the risk you have to imagine of this labor supply situation. There are plenty of people still out of work, but there's plenty of demand for people to get back into work, and bidding up, especially wages, potentially at the lower end, could be a very interesting additional threat to rising inflation. And as we've noted endlessly, people's savings situation is vastly different than it has been in any other previous cycle in recent memory, in terms of you usually get people getting out of work and sitting on lower savings and looking to recoup those. Here we have people sitting on record amounts of savings and potentially a labor shortage bidding up wages. So I think wage data will be another focus point as well, just to add to that point. And then also interesting to note, Russian Central Bank today looking potentially to hike rates 100 basis points. That is the overwhelming consensus now. And this is a central bank that has said that it does not think that inflation is transitory. Russia dealing with 6.5% inflation, and they want to get ahead of that. So, interesting move there. Obviously, supports the Russian ruble. The risk being, of course, if we go into risk-off mode and the dollar strength remains, you could see a surprisingly lackluster continued rally in the Russian ruble with that kind of backdrop. But certainly worth watching, and watching the signaling on guidance when they're making the biggest move in 7 years. The last time they were making rate hikes of that size was during the crisis because of sanctions due to the situation in Crimea, etc. And then a final note, we saw a disappointing French services PMI coming out this morning just before I came to the podcast. So watching those flash PMIs today out of Europe, the U.S. As well up with its flash PMIs later, although these for some reason get ignored in favor of the ISMs, which aren't out until after the first of the month and thereafter. So yes, interesting timing, the seasonality picking up and pressures picking up last week of July, next week, etc. We'll see how things stand. Be careful out there. Have a great weekend, and we will be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.